The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Kia ora e homa, it's Jane here. This is a bit special. It's a bit weird, but special, and I hope you enjoy it. So this episode of The Real Pod is actually a crossover special with Gone By Lunchtime, and it was taken from Gone By Lunchtime's Election 2023 12-hour Megapod live stream that they did last week. And Duncan and I came in and guested for an hour of that, along with Madeline Chapman, our editor for the spinoff, and Ben Thomas, who is just ravenous for reality TV content. He couldn't resist. He came and joined us as well. There's a little bit of a remember when in there on the election worm, the worm that they used to use back in the day on the telly to kind of judge people's reactions to debates. But aside from that, there's just some good political reality TV crossover. We do hope you enjoy it. Sorry so much that it's a bit weird, but you know, that's just The Real Pod.
Tēnā koutou katoa, this is the spin-offs, Gone By Lunchtime Election 2023 Megapod. It's hopefully the only second to last time I have to say that. The words just sort of flow out, really, don't they?
You're doing all right?
And you get to the swing? No, no, I'd say no.
You seem amazing.
Annabelle has just texted saying, can someone let her in? Bro, can you ask me someone to let me in? I think she's got the time wrong on when it is, and she thinks it's 7 o'clock.
Right, I mean, now. I think it's time to just bang everyone in and let it flow.
Do you remember those old podcasts we used to do for the Super Pod at the end of the year when we'd just have 26 people in the studio and people lying on
don't
the floor?
Don't we still do that?
Yeah, it's different
we do,
now.
But you can actually hear people now because Jane's added a, you know, a lick of professionalism to the whole operation. This hour is sort of by design Gone By Lunchtime meets The Real Pod, but kind of sort of that. Like, but Mad Chapman is here, who is neither part of Gone By Lunchtime nor The Real Pod. But in a way, you know, in a way she's there in both of them, isn't she? She kind of, her energy courses through everything we do. Does that sound plausible?
Man? She bridges the gap, right?
I feel like my voice appeared in the background of both of those podcasts as far back as 2016.
Right.
So, you know, it's been around.
That's right. So there we go. Shall I do my little turnout thingamajiggamy for people who haven't done it? Quickly, Jane, turnout guess.
Oh, God. 79.1.
Cool. Dunk.
I've already done it.
Oh.
73.8.
Yeah, no, sorry. So you've done it too, Matt, right?
Yeah, but I heard Oscar... Oscar, the Labour candidate, guessed the exact same number as me. So
can I share the chocolate? You want to go?
Can I just change it by like one decimal?
Okay.
77.1.
Okay.
Are you going up?
Yeah, sure.
Jane, how's your mojo? We haven't got you on the mojo meter yet.
My mojo at the start of the day was probably a 7.
Yep.
It's now no mojo.
No mojo.
No Joe.
You've got no mojo.
I'm tired.
What about this fucking podcast we put on all day?
Okay.
And you're telling me that there's absolutely no.
I like the sort of aggressive mojo, belligerent streak that's coming out of
we'll make it a 10.
I'll show you some fucking mojo, Jane.
Look, I just want to say that the mojo meter was my idea, and it is the thing that I'm most proud of out of this day. Quite aside from your dedication to your role here.
It's Toby. good for me to sort of play first assistant to the mojo. Mojo. We could do mojo pods. We've done monopods. Maybe we do just mojo pods.
I feel sorry for the bottom end, and I don't believe the top end.
Well, you've got to say, like, given the kind of the great mojo hunt that we've been going on the last few months. If you're looking for a sign of life for Labor, a sign of hope, the absolute concentration of high mojo we're seeing up there is probably the best thing that's had in a long time.
It's skewed by the politicians all saying, so much mojo, love it, every minute of it, rather than I go to bed every night weeping into my pillow. You know, that's not a vote winner.
It's not a high turnout.
Is that something that would actually, that people would care about? Like if Chris Hipkins, you said, how's your mojo doing? Honestly, I'm a bit tired. They literally can't say anything but like feeling really great. Yeah. Love every second of it.
Samuel, put me at a one. I feel sorry for the one column that's got no one in it. So I'll take the one. My mojo's at one.
So the real pod is evolved of late. You know, they sometimes say that. What do they say? They say that people living in the past is sort of a criticism, but for you guys, it's now a business model, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what we call we think of the before times very fondly.
Yes,
and the before times for us, nostalgia wise, is anything pretty much pre 2020.
Well, yeah, or sort of before the spin-off, has been most of it, but not all of it.
Yeah. So we So the real pod now is. For free for everyone is a Remember When, which is a nostalgia version of the podcast. Mm. And then we have a nice little paid subscriber part of the pod, which goes up on Substack, which is where we do our traditional television recaps, a lot of chaos. You know, we are the purveyors of the chaos pod, and we will probably bring some of that energy into this room tonight, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So those are our two. Those are our two Chris's, if you like.
Two sides of the Chris, yeah.
And Duncan, you're going to lead us into a Remember When special.
Yeah, we're going to do it live, as Bill O'Reilly once said. We're going to make a Remember When right in front of your eyes.
Well, how do you normally do it?
Well, normally we record it and we lovingly craft it.
All right.
Yeah, and we also don't do it with you in the room.
Right.
Is another difference.
Mm.
I'm in the room. I'm not on mic, but I'm in the room.
You're on mic. What do you mean? No, what do you mean?
No. She's spiritually
don't worry about it. I feel like hour seven Toby would have been right there with me.
I don't know what's going on.
But of course, it's a politics crossover. It's a Gone by Lunchtime themed sort of
crossover event.
Yeah. So I can talk, you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Please do.
Sam, can you do one of those meow meow bows? Hang on.
Seamless.
Oh, it didn't work. Fuck. It's not it. It's going now.
Oh my god, my mojo is flooding back.
I'm up to two now, I think.
I actually had a couple more of my nootropic pills before I came on, and they're really starting to kick in after that float.
Wild. Thank you so much. Duncan, the floor is yours.
It's 2002. Eminem's Without Me is the number one single. Kiwi Bank was launched by jubilant Jim Anderton in January. The Wires had their most successful season ever, winning the minor premiership and making. So normally we would clip and restart there, but we're doing it live.
So yeah, Sam, can you take that bit out?
And making the grand final. And smouldering hunk Kevin Smith died tragically after falling from a film set in China.
Oh.
But arguably the biggest pop cultural story of the year involved United Future leader Peter Dunn. I'm talking about TVNZ's 2002 pre-election debate and asking that we remember when the worm. You know, Peter Dunn was actually, just as an aside, was on the TVNZ 6 PM news tonight.
Was he?
Wearing an extraordinarily fetching grey skivvy.
Yeah. Skivvy?
Like way up to here.
Turtleneck.
Like, his neck was just over the skivvy.
Maybe he's got hickeys. He might have been like making out with someone.
Some hickeys.
And
we've got a hickey sitting out there eating pizza.
And hey! Damn, see, there we go. We're off and running. But the worm, shall I explain it?
Please.
So the worm was actually first used in 1996 and was impactful then. I think it didn't like it when Jim Bolger talked about death happening in hospitals. But it's but it really rose to fame in the 2002 election and is considered to have profoundly impacted it.
What is it?
The Worm is basically, they screened the debate just like the one that we saw last night, and they had a room full of 100 or so civilians, undecided voters, watching. And they all had this like little device in their hand, and they had a great close up of it. And it had, it's got five settings, which the five emotions that you can have in life, and these are good, very good, normal, dull, and very dull. It's fucking outstanding technology.
Yeah.
And it was a crazy debate because you had like eight leaders, and basically whenever the one of the leaders was speaking, they had this worm on screen that was kind of synthesizing all of the 100 responses, and there was a sort of a baseline, which I assume was good. And if they were above it, they were getting some goods, maybe some very good. And if they were below, they were getting some dulls or even very dulls. And it was very controversial because people thought it, and because it did.
Correctly.
They thought that it skewed in a quite psychotic way. The viewing response, when you watch it, you cannot look at anything but the worm. Like, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
And basically the upshot of it, the reason why it's so sort of famous / infamous is that Peter Dunne, previously considered the most boring politician to have ever graced the beehive, suddenly became like wildly popular to the point where I think he took eight MPs in with him. Just these people who had no idea that they were doing anything but, like just doing a favour for a mate were suddenly in Parliament as a result of effectively the worm.
It had a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy, didn't it, in that it engendered media coverage, and then that media coverage meant that there was more airtime, and then the airtime in turn, it wasn't simply that people said, oh, his worm's lovely, I like the look of Peter Dunne's worm, I'm going to vote for him. It was more that the worm turned into more exposure.
Well, that's true. I think it's also like, I mean, there's so much going on. Like, one is previously, like now, it's very normal to know exactly what people are thinking one way or another. You know, you have, like with a live stream, that there's kind of like emoji reactions, you can see tweets. So the vibe is very present in our life. Before, you basically had to watch the debate completely wondering what was going on. Then afterwards, a panel of like three white guys would decide.
It literally was three white guys.
There was a host as well.
Who was also a white guy. Also Peter Williams.
Fourth white guy.
Pre-radicalisation Peter Williams. We assume he wasn't giving anything away. So that part of it was really sort of profound and interesting, but it just revealed so much about the, what normal, especially undecided voters like, and what they like is being told they're going to get some stuff. What they don't like is being told they might have to pay for that stuff. And it's just like the whole story of the debate is, if someone mentions paying for stuff, it's like, very dull. And if someone mentions, here is some stuff, it's like, whoa, that's very good. That's very good. And Peter Dunne just managed to sort of, by being intensely sort of centrist and common sense, he just cleaned house.
At the risk of cutting off the white man. I know how passionate you are about the worm. Have we explained what it sort of visually looks like on the screen?
No, do you want to?
Well, it looks like a little line that moves up and down dynamically through a straight horizontal baseline, right? And I don't know if the one that I watched in prep for the one that I remember was quite janky. I think I might remember the 96 one.
And you could not have been watching debates in 96. That would be.
But I think this is what speaks to the worm.
No, yeah, I think you're remembering 2011.
No. We had a look beforehand, but the graphics on it were really bad.
Oh, okay.
Really bad, like paint, like MS Paint bad.
Like someone was freestyling off of Vibe.
But also the meter of Dell, it's certainly not as sound as our Mojo meter, I would posit, because Dell and very Dell, that's kind of like someone's performance. right? Versus what people were voting on, which was like with your messaging, we like or we don't like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extreme. I'd love to.
I just don't know. I feel like it wasn't thought through properly or it wasn't explained properly in the room how to use it. I don't know.
Yeah, was it like this person is likable or not likable, or they're interesting or not interesting, which I guess interesting would be that maybe the opposite of dull.
Good.
But good or dull.
Exactly.
I would also 100% believe if someone just said, oh, it turns out that whole worm was actually just one guy going like this.
Fell asleep and it's like, last night's debate, you're just going, this goes to the point you've all made. This is Jane Clifton writing in 2011 about the great Jane Clifton, who's not writing about politics at the moment because she's in the High Commission, the embassy in Dublin. But she, after going through various criticisms, she ends on the worm. At heart, it is an inane exercise. You cannot assume even that a reasonable, open-minded worm operator would move the worm up for any politician who expressed a desire to improve the lot of, say, underprivileged children. For though such an aim is universally laudable, the worm operator might overlay the statement with a negative judgment of the politician speaking. You cannot distinguish between approval / disapproval of the utterance and the context in which it is being offered. And that's the, he says, if you could, the end result would be politicians sitting around saying fluffy bunnies and pavlova for pudding. And it is this incredibly reductive device. We're looking for devices, you know, that social media kind of antecedent in a way that is that it? Is that what we've come to, you know?
I mean, like, well, there's so many problems with it. I think, and Jane, I think, identifies them very well there. Like the incentive structure around what it tells the politician to do and talk about is really powerful. Like when you watch it, and it's frustrating, right? Because for some reason on NZ on screen, there is only the equivalent of the Jack Tame post debate show from last night, but not the actual debate itself.
Yeah.
So you only see these little fragments of it. And then you see, you know, the trio of wise white men discussing it. It is just amazing. Like you can't look, you don't look at the politician. You sort of half hear the words and you just look at the worm.
I was just saying it'd be amazing if the politicians, like you can see like a teleprompter or something, could we would like to raise the tax on nobody.
I'm going to go up and I'll see if that helps.
Yeah,
it's or like them panicking in real time.
If you were down below the line for too long, a trap door opens and suddenly there were seven. You know?
That actually would be great, telly.
That's copyright the spin-off. The other thing that's really notable about it is that it's an eight-person debate. Like it's a crazy thing, and that used to be the norm. I think it was 2008.
2008.
John Key and basically asked Helen Clark if she'd go head to head, and the sort of the story goes that she said yes, thinking that she would trounce him, and we know what happened there. But the idea that it was normal for us to have like just this absolute like giant debate where everyone gets roughly, seemingly got roughly equal airtime. It sort of seems mad, but it also, given how much gravity and airtime that the leaders naturally get, there was something kind of quite sweetly democratic, especially in an MMP era, about giving everyone equal say. And you can sort of watching it, you go, that's especially again pre-social media peak monoculture. That's very rare and precious stuff they were getting.
The ACT Party is still in there every election, lobbying hard to be part of the leader debates, and the Greens feel that too. They're not in there lobbying hard; they've accepted it. But there was an argument that what about one of the four debates having them? Of course, they wouldn't want to do that. You know, Chris and Chris are like, what? You know, they imagine that last night. Imagine if they had David Seymour and Marama Davidson beside them; they would have been. Because of their, not because of their personalities, but because of the platforms that they're representing, they would have been blown out of the water, I would have thought. The worms would have been all over. All over. Do they still, was there? No. The worms would have been all over Seymour and Davidson.
I want to see the worm back. And I'll tell you what, I feel like I'm here a little bit representing the disengaged. I've just been very busy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of politics. An 8-leader debate would be great, a great little summary for me. I thank God for the Megapod because I can just catch up on everything, you know, over 12 hours. But, you know, an 8-leader debate, everyone's at home with the technology now. We don't need to go into a studio. We can just get on. Get on with our own worms from home, from the comfort of your living room.
I feel like Samuel's right now trying to code up a worm so that he can kind of sort of administer himself whenever one of us is talking.
I feel like you could, in the very least, get a Toby Manhire floating head and kind of...
The mojo worm.
The mojo worm and just kind of... move it around the screen.
I have a graph of when people are tuning in and tuning out, so I guess that's kind of like a worm,
right? Oh, I don't want to see that.
Mad, are we done? Can I change the subject now?
I would probably do an outro because we're going to pull this and we're going to, in the interest of being efficient,
we might have
to peek behind the curtain.
We don't want to fall in a fiscal
hole.
It's
fine.
I don't even know what the outro is. I love the worm. Basically, can I just beseech you to go onto NZ On Screen and watch the worm itself is fascinating. Watching what New Zealand political coverage used to be like, just these white guys in a room with a table much like this, with a flat screen TV next to them.
The background graphics was a TV, like an AV trolley's TV rolled in.
And TVNZ at the time was making like $100 million a year, like just like without even trying, and they couldn't even like the set. Like you see the crazy AR like. Bloody, the presenters in Fallujah or something. Like, it's so intense now. And TVNZ is just like spewing, like, I think maybe they need to get back to the ultra juicy El Cheapo days. And anyway, it's a great watch. It's a great watch. Also, it basically sends you down a 2002 election rabbit hole. I watched a whole hour of Havoc and Newsboys election special.
I got a message every 10 minutes over the course of about another 12 hours from Duncan as he went on his journey through New Zealand On Screen's politics collection.
Lots of screen grabs of, like, Helen Kark credits. Barry Soper being misidentified as an RNZ journalist and his kids sort of wandering through. Honestly, TV. Great medium. I don't know what happened to it.
Thanks for remembering with us. That's good. That's our Gumby tagline that we have at the end.
I couldn't remember how to end it. I was just speaking and my pits are absolutely drenched.
Should we do that one with all of us together just in case you want to use that?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for remembering with us.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
That was some real Susie Cato energy.
That was so wholesome.
Actually, can we speak to some reality television? Speaking of Susie Cato,
because David call NASA.
No, that would be a disaster. Susie Cato won a series of Dancing with the Stars, didn't she? Did she win it or I can't remember? But it was David Seymour's. It was David Seymour's season. And I've asked everyone who's come through today, everyone that I've managed to catch, if they do reality TV. The Real Pod is a reality TV recap podcast originally, so this is where this has come from. And I got some interesting results, I thought. Michael Wood said,
I wouldn't. I despise them with all of my being.
Very dull.
Very dull.
Wow. What do you really think?
Well, Mahesh, we know, is hugely enthusiastic about reality TV.
He'd die for it.
He nearly did, and he would still do it again.
This is the National Party candidate for Auckland Central.
Yeah, and he said he'd like to do the Amazing Race with his race buddy being either Richie McCaw or Glenn Osborne.
You can find out more of that on an episode of The Real Pod that you have got with Mahesh about
about his near-death experience. Chloe, not at the moment, never say never though, maybe after politics, which is very wise,
yes.
I would say.
That's a yes.
Yeah. She has been asked to go on Bake Off, and she's been asked to go on Celebrity Treasure Island, both of which she's turned down.
Mm.
She didn't say what she would do, but she might do something one day. Who knows? Oscar, not a huge watcher. Wouldn't write it off. Maybe Traitors. James Shaw, extremely unlikely. Better things to do with his time. But he did apply for the Amazing Race when he was in the UK.
Oh, my God. You can't find me, that. I quit.
Brooke has also been asked to do Celebrity Treasure Island. But she burns easily, so she doesn't really want to spend a lot of time in the sun. She says the commitment while she's in, the time commitment while active in politics is just too much, but would consider doing an Is It Cake type show. She's not sure that she can bake, but she fancies her ability to tell the difference between cake and not cake.
How long were you talking to her for?
That's a long time.
A wholesome answer.
Erica Stanford used to produce reality television.
She did, that's true.
And her husband, it was actually on Treasure Island.
Season
versus The First Man.
Yeah. They were in the final three together.
Yeah.
And she told him.
So just to be clear, Clark Gayford and Erica Stanford's husband,
Kane Stanford,
were on a reality TV show together.
Treasure Island. But not only that.
Was that discussed? Was that a known fact?
This is in 1998.
Oh. This is like the worm.
We weren't discussing COVID. That would be weird.
Gayford wasn't. It wasn't Celebrity Treasure Island. He was just.
All right.
Clark
this
Gayford,
was what became
part-time radio
the phenomenon
announcer.
Began.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the most incredible fact that Erica told us was that they made the final three, and someone needs to get this footage, and they. They killed a pig by beating it to death with a shovel, like Clark and Kane. It's the most macabre,
and they've got
like video nasty I've ever.
But this is final three, so it's not like they're needing to feed themselves for like weeks at a time.
No,
like
they,
this
I think
is,
they just want, they just didn't like that
last
pig.
They saw a pig
island.
Over there, and over there a shovel, and they're like, "Well, what
I'm
do you
so
do?
Bored.
Got some time.
Not going
to
attack the shovel with the pig, so."
No, old versions of the show, they used to have the final two there for like three or four more days. So they would have been really.
You can eat leaves for 3 days.
Why would you when you can kill a pig with a shovel? You know?
It was a different time.
It was a different era.
So I like the way you described that beating to death, like hitting a pig with a shovel, you know.
But I'm pretty sure that's how she described it. So it was the you could really see it when she was talking. Like it was the over the head, over and over. Because a shovel is not that good, I wouldn't think. As a pig, I think it would have quite a strong skull. Maybe Lucy Kelly's listening.
So you do need to do a proper beating.
Shovels could have quite a sharp edge. So I feel like why are they using the blunt side of the shovel?
Yeah,
but I don't know if. Like
now, I'm
in
like
terms of
they
the
should
talk,
have killed it better.
You're going to review this like Lisa Prager.
We've really taken a turn here.
Have you gone through?
Erica would see she's turned down Dancing with the Stars, but she would do it purely for the weight loss and fitness aspect. She'd also do a Reno show, but is worried it may cause tension in her marriage. David Seymour, who has very famously appeared on Dancing with the Stars. He wouldn't do it again. Dancing with the Stars was the right thing at the right time, and it's the most respectable of reality shows. It's a kids' show. And then he name-checked Susie Cato as all sort of evidence that Dancing with the Stars is essentially a kids' show.
Hey, Ben Thomas.
He's
lurking in the corner holding two cans of Mountain Dew.
Double parked with Mountain Dew.
The Mountain Dew. And I wasn't sure if that was a joke, like at my expense.
No, no.
Not a joke. Oh.
Matt, are you coming back though? You're not going away. I want to talk about Zodiacs with Matt.
Can we put Mad on Samuel's mic, but she might just not be in frame.
Well, she can share. She can share.
No, we can share mic.
She can share.
I mean, you are the spin-off editor. I could just go over there.
I want to know, Mad, have you written your because we've done a lot of science on this podcast today, and have you done your Zodiacs piece yet?
Yes. This is unfortunately breaking news in that as the editor, I instead delegated and somebody else wrote it. Oh. So I have not written the Zodiac. It has been written. I did not write it.
Is that how – did you just sort of say
– No, you need to be on mic now too, Toby.
That's fine. Who wrote it?
Gabby, a lovely staff writer.
And what's the gist? What's the skinny?
It's got real 11th hour energy.
This is what I thought this whole thing was going to be like. So I think we've actually done very well to not bring this energy until the last second to last hour.
Off the top of my head, I think there were some surprising candidates for the different star signs. So both Chris Hipkins, Chris Bishop, born a day apart. Both Virgos, very like, you know, organized type A types. I'm a Pisces, Toby's a Pisces. Our candidate matches as Pisces are Judith Collins, Nicola Willis, Louise Upston. And I just feel like none of those three vibed like Pisces to me. And so, and actually looking at all of them, I was like, maybe politicians just exist outside of astrology.
Well, wait,
I'm sure lots of people
but I've got another theory.
No, I'm going to go with politicians exist outside of astrology.
I like it. You have to give up your star sign when you enter like some ceremony where you're wearing a hood, and you have to agree to give up all of your attributes when you go into that big round building.
I mean, we had to do it a weird backwards way of just individually Googling the lists of the parties. And either Aquarians,
that's me,
are like not good at politics, or there are just no politicians.
Like a zero.
We did not find any.
Statistically, that's impossible.
Someone get in touch. If you're a politician and you're an Aquarius, get in touch.
Please. Like what's Aquarius? That's like artistic and flighty and sort of
about that. Reading some Lee Bowen books.
Reading books. Yeah, no, they're sorry. Definitely not politicians.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read a book since Twilight, and I'm an Aquarius.
Well, once you've reached the top of the mountain, you don't want to come down.
But yeah, so basically, we are. We have not told anybody how to vote. We have just simply suggested some handy hints for different star sign traits, and also just let you know which people in Parliament, fortunately or unfortunately, share your sign. And that's actually not up on the spin-off right now. It's going up at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Set your alarms.
I feel when Toby is signing off the Megapod.
Are we going to get done by the Disinformation Project for this?
Oh, you're so getting done.
Fact check. Star signs aren't real.
Ben, are you excited to be on the Real Pod? This is the Real Pod. You're on the Real Pod.
I am. Well, famously, I only started doing a politics podcast with a spinoff in order to get in on the Real Pod. It took years.
But we did have you in. You came in and recapped it with the Bachelorette or something.
Was it 2020, the first year of...
It took a pandemic.
I think it was... Yeah.
Sorry. You didn't have anything to... No, you wouldn't. Not to get on the Real Pod.
You wouldn't release a virus into the...
That's pretty...
Oh. Have you guys talked about reality TV? Yeah,
we've only really talked about the. You know, I asked all the politicians who came through today if they would and what they would.
Oh,
you know,
I saw that.
But that was very. I mean, but we can certainly talk about the politicians who have appeared on reality TV.
Yeah, like have you got any favourite appearances? Did you watch the one with Paula Bennett? I didn't watch that.
Rich Listers.
Oh, did that actually air in the end?
I don't know.
I think it did.
I sort of read about it, but I didn't. I don't.
So some of these shows get a lot more sort of herald traction than they do viewers. Like I think it was on like Bravo 2 or something.
I would have thought I would have heard more about it because I think she would have been great TV talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
No way of finding out.
That's right. It'll be lost forever.
Nikki Kay was on. What was Nikki Kay on?
It's a show called Castaway or something.
Right.
But that was when she was very young.
Civilian, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about people who choose to go on either during their time in politics or after.
Rodney Hyde went on Neighbours at War to try and facilitate between two warring Epsom residents, I think.
Oh, wow.
He failed
completely.
it's
and then later resigned
show.
From politics in disgrace.
It's going great
now,
though.
It's a short-potted history of Rodney Hyde's time.
He was on Dancing with the Stars. It was disgraceful there, too. Like,
Dancing with the Stars, it used to be that act leaders had to write books. This was the Roger Douglas legacy. And Seymour tried that in 2017.
I've read that.
But, you know, Dancing with the Stars is the real juice for minor party leaders mounting a comeback. Two ACT leaders have appeared on Dancing with the Stars, and two ACT leaders have greatly increased their votes by almost, you know, tenfold the next election.
Interesting fact about David Seymour's appearance on Dancing with the Stars is he actually made it further than any other politician who's appeared on the show. So you've got Christine Rankin, Marama Fox, Georgina Beyer, Pam Corkery, Rodney Hyde. David Seymour got fourth, I think, in his season. The headline of one of the pieces I read that talked about this said, David Seymour finally evicted from the Stars. Because he got the lowest on the scoreboard.
He kept getting rescued by the
crowd. Yeah.
He was lowest on the scoreboard for every week that he was on that show.
I'm pretty sure that we did a story about him getting more text votes than he got
votes in the previous election in 2017. Yeah.
There was some sort of 13,000 social media
nationwide.
It was that year when he got more votes in Epsom than he did party got nationwide.
And was that when you were working?
That was
on
the campaign I was advising on. In my defence, I later did say that you should definitely go on Dancing with the Stars.
But aside from that, I mean, Dancing with the Stars is definitely the safe one that they'll go on because they're much less likely to
have to club a pig to death.
Have to club a pig to death.
I don't think they had to; they just wanted to.
With Clark Gayford,
I don't.
Yeah,
that's I remember because Kane was the student president when I was at uni, and he came back. He came back a shadow of himself.
Was that before or after he had the half beard, the famous half beard?
I think it was before the half beard.
Like David Cunliffe's beard last night, similar?
No, it was cut down the middle rather than the height, sort of, yeah.
There was actually an
asymmetrical beard.
Yeah, just one side. I think it might have been dyed blue as well. It actually has made a comeback, the half beard. I saw a pole vaulter at the World Athletics Champs had it was quite a light half beard compared to Kane's, but it was still a pure asymmetrical half beard. So something to look out for, trend watch.
Do you think that was something to do with the poll voting technique?
That was the beginning of reality TV, right, around that time, because another guy that we knew went on a show called I can't remember what it was called, but it was like it was a six episode sort of proto reality series of like young people's lives.
Is it Flatmates?
No, it wasn't. It was after Flatmates, but it was.
The one where you got the internet and you had to like live on the internet? What was that one called?
No, it basically followed sort of six storylines, and one of our mates was on it, and he was going out with this like bikini model at the time. And it was when we first became disabused of the sort of truth-telling power of TV because, you know, I was like, wow, that was a really awkward breakup scene with, you know, your girlfriend, you know, on TV that I saw last night. And he's like, yeah, like we broke up over the phone, but then they insisted on shooting it. So we had to kind of, you know, all these things that are now sort of commonplace. It was quite a revelation.
Oh, it was really 20
years old, 20 year olds or whatever.
Great times.
Jane, you've been on reality TV.
But I'm not a politician.
Are you thinking of going into politics?
No, but I'm an Aquarius, so I'm not. I can't.
That would be amazing to be the first in New Zealand history, seemingly.
I've said way too many damn things to ever go into politics.
That's true. Your archive. You'd have to scrub the archive.
I'd have to scrub. So I'd have to like get hold of the Wayback Machine and just unplug it. Like it's I can't. I couldn't even if I wanted to.
Could you be a politician, Duncan?
No.
I've got. I got yeah. photos.
would you be a politician?
If he did, Jane would be a wealthy woman, I think is what she's saying.
Only if he was successful in politics. How much does it pay?
Pretty good.
If you get in.
Yeah, how much does it pay?
A workaday MP gets 140?
180. 180.
Is that much now?
Yeah.
And perks,
they're
right.
not falling behind inflation. Yeah. I think 180 includes the they get bulk funded for some of their expenses like travel,
and they get a kind of a weird KiwiSaver. They've got a special superannuation.
Yeah, I don't think it's included in that. They're very generous. They're very generous, but not as generous as it used to be.
Yeah,
it used to be like wild, kind of like judges still have now, but.
And they have you can't talk about that. That's did you see that?
Yeah, no. Andrew Vance has been doing some great things
with
the establishment is just stonewalling. And because yeah, I used to work in the Attorney General's office, and they still, you know, they were super secret of the judges. Like I heard a rumor that, you know, when you became a judge, you got 2 free pairs of glasses. and it's like surely you weren't going through your legal career unable to see until you were lucky enough to be appointed a high court judge, and you're like, everything's turning around now. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I heard when I was in the establishment, right?
And that's going out live, so you know they can't do anything about it.
It's too late now.
Yeah, you can't injunct that, judges.
Do you have any memories, Ben, of the worm? We were talking about the worm before. Is that something that entered your consciousness?
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, because
which worm was your favourite?
I mean, in hindsight, very vulgar, you know, because all these headlines like Peter Dunne, the man who tamed the worm, and you know, the worm master, Peter Dunne. I mean. So my vague recollection is they had the worm before 2002, but they didn't show it until after the debate. The audience would be diddling away,
and then afterwards
they'd say who won. You know, who did our audience think?
Yeah, right.
And in 2002 was the first time this thing is just like there underneath everything. You know, and as soon as anything that was good, you know, anything that had a positive connotation, you know, the worm would soar. Anything that was slightly, you know, even if they said the word "butt," you know, you know, and
it was amazing that like Laila Hare says, she's talking, she's doing really well, and then she says, "If the wealthiest paid a little more," and the worm just went, it just clipped. it was chilling.
There are a lot of little worm pictures in the live chat, by the way. Lots of little worms. And I have to say that this particular one, like the main emoji worm, is the same one that I use when I'm texting the father of my children when we have a worm issue with the children. And so when you start talking about Peter Dunne being the master of the worm, I really need to separate.
There are worse conversations.
But the thing is, it was...
That's not better.
Because of his worm mastery, prior to that, United Future, which was his party, had been a bunch of very centrist Labour and centrist National MPs in 1996 who broke off to create, you know, to rebel in the most centrist way possible for MMP. They were like, we're going to have a party that is dead down the middle.
Pauline Gardner was one, yeah?
Pauline Gardner, there were a few others, but Clive Mathewson maybe, I think? Maybe? I don't know.
But in the 2002 election, they had these. They joined up with these Christians, right?
Yeah, every election they would have, and subsequent to that, every election they would really struggle to get 500 party members.
Right,
and so Peter Dunne would join with, I think first it was the Outdoor Recreation Party, then it was something called the Migrant and Ethnic Affairs. Ethnic People's Party, and then in 2002 it was this weird Christian outfit who had, I think, they had disengaged. They'd previously been part of one of the other Christian outfits, and
Christian Democrats.
Christian Democrats,
like that,
but they were called Future New Zealand, which is why it was United Future, right? And so the party list, Peter Dunne was just by himself, and he was perfectly comfortable with this. He was like, yeah, all these wacko Christian nut jobs are just going to like sign up as members to my party. I'll register so that when I get re-elected in Ohariu, I get a leader's budget and I get to go on the TV debates instead of just being an independent, you know, on the normal salary. And then suddenly he's got all these people with him. He's got Gordon Copeland, who was this guy who'd published a brilliant memoir / autobiography prior to entering Parliament called Faith Works, which described how on his honeymoon he and his wife went around healing people around England by laying hands on them. He described being attacked by a demon near a swimming pool at a Thailand hotel. I mean, recounting this to one MP, and he said, I think I remember that demon when I was in Thailand.
Man, that's real kind of, you know, like we need some of that back in Parliament.
One of their MPs had to resign before becoming, one of them wasn't a New Zealand citizen, it turned out, they had to resign. And then another one of them, I think it was Dr. Bernie Ogilvie. His degree was from an online university, and this was 2002, right? So nobody suspected a thing. They were like, well, if it's got a web page, it must be a real university, right? But it was like some doctor of theology from like a web page, and yeah, just you know.
Were any of them Aquarians?
So I thought they all were.
It does sound like they were.
I think they would have burned anyone who read horoscopes as heretics.
Oh, a little moment of silence there, Toby.
Do you know that much about everything?
No. I used to write a column in the NBR with a guy called David Young, very, very, very good columnist back in the day, now doing big things internationally. But he was the one who had discovered that book. the memoir at the Parliamentary Library, and so I think we popularized it, and for a while the quotes would sort of follow Gordon everywhere, but yeah.
There's a funny question for you to put to Ben, because I feel like saying that to you all the time. I'm just gonna, I don't know if you've got any self-awareness, but
I've just got a very glib surface level knowledge of a lot of stuff, but I mean that was very deep.
That was
he was quoting
deep.
From a
United Future self-published great impression on me.
And especially, I think the bit where Toby and I quickly googled the name of the Christian Democrat Party. Toby said the Christian Democrats, thinking that you'd forgotten or you couldn't quite recall the name of the party. And of course, you were like, no, yes, five, you know.
I can't remember what they were. I think they might have been the Christian Democrats before they were Future New Zealand, maybe.
Yeah, but you knew.
Maybe.
You knew.
Maybe.
We definitely know.
It's like all the anti-vax parties now. There was a lot of movement and sort of recombination back then. Okay, speaking of which, so traitors.
Yeah, okay.
Have we talked about traitors?
We haven't.
Oh, feel safe.
Traitors. 60 ACT list MPs. Go to a deserted manor, five of them are anti-Semitic anti-vaxxers. and the faithful have to discover who they are before October the 14th.
Can we rush release this ahead?
That is an excellent idea.
That is outstanding.
All right. Thank you all so much. I'm sorry, I feel as though I've sort of slightly zoned out, you know, in this fantastic hour, but it's been an enormous amount of fun. And we've got one to go. No, it's been a lot of fun, and it's been cool, and it's just perfect penultimate before we attempt the final furlong. I can see a small light at the end of the tunnel. It might be the end. It might be death.
A real HR issue there. Can you see the great shovel of coming down from the sky?
Clark's right behind you.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.